Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This episode sponsored by Hume. You're eating clean, hitting your workouts, doing everything right. So why does the scale still look the same? Because weight alone can't show fat loss, muscle gain, or real progress. The Hume Body Pod changes that. It tracks 45 body metrics like body fat, muscle mass, hydration, and visceral fat, so you can actually see what's happening inside your body. With 8 sensors and advanced multi-frequency technology, it gives you a full body breakdown in seconds, right from home. You can even track progress by body segment, arms, legs, and core, so nothing gets missed. And inside the app, you'll get personalized insights to help you adjust and improve over time. Stop relying on a number that doesn't tell the whole story. Go to humehealth.com and check out the Hume Body Pod.
Welcome to the Ladies of Liverpool podcast.
Everything Liverpool.
Everything for ladies.
Ladies of Liverpool.
With Leanne Campbell.
Here we go again, ladies of Liverpool. So many years of great conversations and they continue. Today, I'd love to welcome some newbies in, some oldies in, people in Liverpool and way beyond who've been here since the very start, all those years back before lockdown. A conversation today that is going to be something I think we'll take with us forward into our lives, into conversations where I'm not present. I'm Leanne Campbell. I'm your host. We are sponsored by the Orthodontic Practice on Rodney Street. So thanks to all the team there for helping us get into the community to make a difference and to give people a platform to speak their truth on. This week, then, we speak to Leanne. Leanne Lucas was involved in something 2 years ago this month that none of us will ever forget. Something happens in every lifetime. And this, for many of us, is a thing of nightmares. When the Southport attacks happened, you'll remember where you were, who you were with, your first thoughts, who you wanted to protect. Even if you were nowhere near this attack, you felt it in the pit of your stomach. And that today is part of what we're talking about. Leanne, thank you so much for joining us. You, of course, are moving forward with something that we all need to know about. And that's why I've got you here with me today. Because Let's Be Blunt is close to your heart and we are making changes, not only in Liverpool, Southport, Northwest, but way beyond. Tell us what you're doing, Leanne.
Well, before we start, I just want to acknowledge I am actually welling up here because I forget the impact, because it's massive, the impact of what happened, because it was us and what we have to deal with on a daily basis. I meet people and they say, Leanne, I had to take days off work and I live down south, or, you know, I'm a teacher, I've got children, and these conversations, and it's real for them as well. And it does blow my mind that actually people will stop today and go, oh gosh, I remember exactly where I was at that time. And I reflect back on some other major incidents that have happened in our lifetime. Like, we all know where we were and what we were doing when the bomb went off at the Manchester Arena, 9/11, Jamie Bulger. We remember because it's our human instinct, isn't it? Of the connection and protection. And like, so yeah, can I just wanted to acknowledge that with all the viewers as well, of this is just so many layers. Well, and the ripple effect is huge.
Selfishness. As a parent or as a performer, as a teacher, everybody, I think our natural instinct is when you hear something as horrific as what happened, your first instinct is, this can't be true. This can't be true. This can't be real. I think we all went through that phase. Then we bonded with the names we were hearing, and yours was one of the first. And then we all thought, what would we do? If this could happen to Leanne and these children and everybody involved, this could happen to any of us. And then the selfishness comes in. Do we allow our children out the front door? Do we stop how we're living our lives? And that's where we are with you right now, is that you're trying to make sure that people have a focus and there's something positive to come from this horrendous
attack. So what I learned when... Well, we were we got given almost a job role of you become a victim. So I didn't apply for it. I can never, ever get rid of that. And, you know, honestly, I wouldn't want to get rid of it because that's obviously now part of my journey and my life. But you are forever known as a victim and the side effects and symptoms and all the things that come along with that. But yeah, there's many avenues that you can go down after something disastrous. And disastrous can be on any level. It could be a family breakup, you know, losing a friend, and it could be to a major incident and something on this scale. But there's many avenues that you could take afterwards, and there's no education around that. So you haven't prepped yourself on, do you know what, if something bad happens to me tomorrow, what are my options for how I continue the next day? But through, I think it's internally this happens, but also through wanting to learn. Like, I have a real passion and desire to learn all the time. And it's something that I would almost class that as one of my hobbies is learning, and not just learning through like knowledge and things like that, but learning through interactions and perspectives and all these and different things. But I learned that there was a huge chunk of people who, after something terrible had happened to them, found a new purpose. And I hadn't understood what that was because I was like, no, that's not going to happen. But actually, if you open yourself up to some opportunities and say, do you know what, I'm just going to talk to this person, or I'm just going to read into this, or I'm just going to look at this. And then sometimes things ignite in you and you go, actually, I'm really interested in this, or I do see something here. This purpose just sort of was born organically. Mm-hmm. So I didn't come out of an attack and think, do you know what, right, I've got to roll my sleeves up and now this and this. Like, it doesn't happen like that. Like, you ebb and flow. Like, you have good days, you have bad days, and a lot of the time, and especially in things like this, I don't go into the depth of the bad days. I don't go into the, do you know what, you know, you might have a fantastic event on a Friday and Saturday you just burst into tears and you don't really know why.
Mm-hmm.
But having a purpose can help you to survive.
Just a few moments into this conversation, can I point out, you've got this beautiful gift of everything you're saying. You're connecting it with other people. None of this is about you. I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, you could sit here and say this awful thing happened to me and this is how it's changed my life and I struggle with this. And just listen to everything's about everybody else. Has that come from therapy, or is this a learned coping mechanism, or have you always been like this, Leanne?
Maybe a mixture.
Okay.
Because sometimes it can go against you to be for everyone else. I think it was innate in me as Leanne, but I think that's why I went into teaching. I don't think I went into teaching because I wanted to educate children. I think I wanted to connect and try and make things better for people.
Yeah.
And I think I only know that on reflection, for when maybe, you know, you wonder why you get some certain children that other people don't get, and you wonder why people stay in touch with you for so long and these types of things. And you think, actually, you do leave marks on people.
Yeah.
And, you know, in society, that can be good or bad. And I hope that through my teaching career, I left a good mark, whether that was some inspiration, some hope, or do you know what? Miss Lucas actually saw me. She actually loved me in the times when I really did not like myself as a 7-year-old. I do really hope that that's something I brought. And also Heidi, like, that's where me and Heidi met. We met in the classroom. She was my teaching assistant many, many years ago. And do you know what? We were such a team. And there are times when we do sit and we reflect on how many lives we've had a positive impact on. And it's such a shame that this unforeseen attack happened to them girls, to them families, and to us, because none of us deserved it.
No.
Like, we were all good people and we all still are good people. And for something like this to happen, it's so difficult for you to not lose yourself. So yeah, there's part of me where I'm like, that's already always in me, to look out for other people. And then it felt like it was a coping mechanism after this happened, because then I started to look out for others.
Yeah.
So I wanted to advocate for everyone else.
And this is where Let's Be Blunt comes into it. And I really want to focus on this right now because this was new to me. I didn't know about it and I want to make sure everybody knows about it. What is Let's Be Blunt in your own words, Leanne?
So Let's Be Blunt is a prevention movement where we are looking at how to reduce knife harm and knife crime through looking at statistics, cases, and working with partnerships across the UK. Some of the things we focus on are the design of the knife. So there is out there a safer alternative where the tip has been removed, and we could talk about that in a bit more detail in a minute. So there is a safer alternative. We look at knife disposal. So how do we get rid of knives that we don't want? We look at trauma-informed education and how that's also given to staff and adults, because adults need the education as well. And then also, how do we provide some sort of support through resilience and hope and this sort of knowledge I've developed this year on how you can find a purpose and you can sort of use that as part of your healing process as well. So there's all sorts of arms and directions to Let's Be Blunt. I think it's a lot more than what it just started off as, because there's a real gap, which I think we are filling in the UK, but using lived experience in some of the highest conversations and decision making in this country, and using lived experience from that community, and that's where we're seeing a lot of impact.
Yeah, because a lot of professionals will think they know, or they've, you know, researched and they believe that their findings, but to actually understand a situation, you do have to go back to somebody who's lived it. So the reason you're so passionate about this, which I didn't understand, was all because of the knife that was used in the attack. So let's talk about that day.
Yeah. One thing people do question me about is, you know, this isn't about the weapon, Leanne. This is about the person. This was a premeditated sort of thing. And yes, that was. And that's my trauma.
Yeah.
So I don't go there for my sense of purpose and hope and positivity. Like that is unexplainable. Like there's no answers to that. And I hope no one ever has to live through that again. We look at what's happening in day-to-day life. So what I found through the court case was it was an everyday kitchen knife. And I started, once you see something, you can't unsee it. So I realised that's in every drawer, in every kitchen, whether that's a domestic home, a school, community hub, a hospital, a prison, everywhere where you think there's potentially a scenario that could happen or a vulnerability or something like that, it's there. Mm-hmm. So we look at moments of crisis, impulse and dysregulation. And anyone can have a moment of crisis, impulse and dysregulation. It's not necessarily somebody who's sat and pre-planned what they're going to do. These people, I would like to hope there was services and organizations out there monitoring these people. That's what you would hope as a member of the general public.
Yes.
What we're here doing is going, do you know what, if you do feel you're in a place with responsibility, or you're in a place where you have vulnerable people, there is an option so that this potentially doesn't have to be as bad as certain consequences could be in that moment of impulse. So whether it's somebody feeling in threat and reaching out to the knife block and lifting it up, or whether it's someone running into a communal kitchen and getting hold of one of them, it's what could be put in place so that other interventions could work. Because we're not saying that this is going to be the answer to knife crime or knife harm. This is just one part of a puzzle piece where, you know, you need your mentors, you need a lot of support, victim support, violence reduction, police, you need all of that. But there's something here that every adult can get hold of. Every parent, grandparent, teacher, social worker, anyone in any role who is out there protecting children, there is this option available to create awareness over, do you know what, there's an alternative. Because something we don't know in the UK, and this is what I would like to bring to the forefront, is the most used knife in any sharp instrument on homicide is a kitchen knife. So that at the minute, the figure is 46%. And I know we can look at statistics in all different ways and things, but there is no argument about 46% That is an awful lot when in my mind the media is telling me it's zombie knives and ninja swords.
That's what I was just about to say. All we hear about is, you know, machetes and these illegal knives and swords that are bought on the internet. And that's where I thought the danger was. I had no idea that the majority of these crimes are being committed. It's with a simple kitchen knife, which we've all got access to. But do we then just say to everybody, right, you've got to get your kitchen knife and get rid of it? We can't do that because people want kitchen knives.
Well, it's a function of everyday life.
Yeah.
But actually, when you look at the statistics that then go into domestic homicides, it's 76%.
Wow, Leanne.
Because what is in your home that you could use? It makes sense when you look at it.
But we can't just say, right, we're banning kitchen knives.
No, but what we're kind of doing as a country, I don't think so now, but what we were doing is we were ignoring this fact. So you're like, oh, do you know what? Everyone needs a kitchen knife. It's too hard. This is too hard to manage.
So we ignore.
So we're going to just ignore it because actually we don't want to be seen as taking away people's rights. We don't want to be seen to be telling anyone what to do.
Yep.
And actually you can do it through a different model of you create this awareness and then everyone has the responsibility to do what they like after hearing that. So what we do as Let's Be Blunt is we look at a model which looks at changing people's mindsets, behaviour, and cultural change.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what it is actually things have evolved over time, and maybe there might have been uproar at the time, which we can talk about some of these moments where we've done this before as society.
Yeah.
So there might have been uproars before, or it's happened and you haven't noticed.
Yeah.
So when you look around your home and your kitchen, things have evolved in design.
Mm-hmm.
Like many kitchens now have an air fryer. I can't remember when that became everyone has one now.
Yes.
It just sort of grew overnight of like, actually, people started seeing that, do you know what, this is making my life easier, this and this.
Yep.
So it's kind of harder when it's saying, I'm not saying to anyone, do you know, you're a potential criminal.
And no,
that's
of course.
That's the bit where people will go, do you know what, Leanne, I might not swap my knife because me and my family are not going to do that. So we look around, actually, you might not do it, but what about anyone else that has access to that drawer, that knife block, that drain?
Anyone you welcome into your home.
Or somebody taking it to give to somebody else.
Yeah.
It's these sort of scenarios.
Yeah.
And actually, these knives are still on shop floors at child level. They're very cheap. You can get them on offer. And that's something that sometimes when I see them and it's like buy one, get one free, or it's like 50% off. And I just think, actually, this is not responsible retail.
Leanne, you're opening my eyes to things that have been right in front of me. I've never thought about that. I've never walked through, you know, a shop that sells knives and thought, they're child level. Someone could pick that up, take it.
You know, cigarettes are behind the cabinet.
Yes.
Why are the knives not?
These are the questions I've never asked myself.
So they'll challenge you, challenge 25. You have to get out your ID and prove you're over 18. That is it. I don't know what happens if you were to say, oh, do you know what? I'm about to go and use these knives for this, and this, which we have cases in Merseyside where that's happened, where somebody has taken a knife from a shop. They've bought it because they're a 40-year-old man.
Yeah.
They've bought it. They've taken it out. They've thrown the package into the hedge and gone straight to murder their life. That there is a famous case here that's not happened not that long ago where that happened. So why is it not important?
Yeah.
Like we're banning ninja swords, zombie knives, all these types of things. Okay, if we don't get to the root cause of why this is happening, where are people going to turn to next?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I think the statistics of the kitchen knife are going to raise.
Mm.
I don't think it's going to get any better unless we start looking into the people who are making a difference. And that's where I sit at the moment, is I'm working with some fantastic experts across the country who are in roles, public serving roles, who are going, do you know what? Let's have a different outlook on prevention, and let's include a little bit more in that prevention, and let's safeguard people. And actually it's the same as fire safety and things. So we look at stuff like, we have smoke alarms, we have the fire hydrants, we have fire drills, we do the course every year.
Yeah.
Do we have the conversations around knives, where we're storing them, all these types of things?
1,000,000% yes.
So this is where we're trying to raise that bar of, let's just have the conversation, and hopefully no one in your organisation will ever have to be a victim of what happens.
Yeah.
Like, but it's the same with when I said before about where we've changed in society before. Yes, we've got laws and legislations for things that enforce it.
Yeah.
But actually, what enforces stuff is people's social and moral value. Mm-hmm. So seatbelts. When I was a child, it was, put your seatbelt on, maybe not.
Yeah.
If the police stop us, oh gosh, you know, oh, put it on. But now It's become so instilled in us that you wouldn't leave your drive without your child having their belt on, because you know the dangers that could happen.
Yeah.
You know how that seatbelt could prevent it getting worse.
Yeah.
It's not because you're a reckless driver. It's not because you live somewhere dangerous. It's because you've been privy to that awareness.
Yeah.
And it's being spoken about over and over and over again that I now wouldn't start the engine without my belt on.
I'm older than you. I lived through it, clunk, click, every
exactly.
trip. And you had your strap lines and your marketing campaigns, and it just became, this is how we live and this is what we're going to do.
Yeah. And
so bring me back to the knives then. When we talk about doing, you know, a campaign like that and something that's life-changing, that's going to be everywhere and we're all going to embrace it, what does that look like?
So it looks like a multitude of things. Number one is people can take the Let's Be Blunt pledge, which is you're pledging to be responsible for the knives that you own, because everyone has a knife for the functionality of cooking. And we're trying to change that narrative of, actually, let's go back to when we were younger. And when I saw a kitchen knife, straight away I thought, it's to make a meal. Whereas potentially now, it's that's to protect me, that's to use when I'm fearful. Because not everything is about, I want to kill someone.
Yeah.
Some of it is, gosh, I need to protect myself, this world's a scary place. We need to shift that narrative back to, actually, if we see knives in places that isn't the kitchen, oh my God, there should be a siren going off there of, this is not right. So, you know, I work with people who say knives to the kitchen, not the street. And, you know, there's all this sort of, can we get young people, families back into this cooking and seeing the knife as a cooking utensil and not as a weapon?
Yeah.
Now, it can be misused. It's a bladed article. That's the definition. The definition of a kitchen knife is a bladed article. It's sharp, and chefs will say it has to be sharp, Liam, because that creates the art of cookery.
Of course.
But also it creates less accidents in the kitchen.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you're slicing, if it's sharp, it actually would, you don't use as much force.
Mm-hmm.
So then you don't have that accident. So they say, you know, we cannot get rid of the sharp blade. Okay. So then we have the talk around the tip. Do you need the tip? And we talk about the injuries that are caused in a stabbing motion. Because actually a knife shouldn't be used in a stabbing motion. It should be used cutting, slicing, chopping.
Yeah.
So actually knife blocks are ineffective. When you pull a knife from a knife block, you're already holding it, as in you're in a horror film.
Yeah.
So there's no moment to regulate there. Mm-hmm. In like, actually, if you were holding it slightly differently, there's so many steps your brain has to go through to, actually, maybe I don't want to go through with what I'm about to do.
Yeah.
And it's looking at, it's looking at the tip, and chefs say you use the tip to defillet a fish and to decarcass an animal. So my response to that is, I don't do that in my house. I know some people do, but majority of domestic kitchens are not doing these things.
So do we license these then for people who are professionals?
We've had these conversations.
For hairdressers, you know, you've only got access to peroxide and bits and bobs if you've got the card and you can go to the warehouse and you get your supplies. Would that be something
it's an avenue, and, you know, butchers have licenses, stuff like that,
yes.
to house as many sort of utensils that they have. But there's discussions, because actually there's pros and cons to all sorts, and that we need to get all sectors on side.
Yeah.
So we do need really brave role model chefs.
Yeah.
So if there's any of them out there who are listening today who go, do you know what, actually, I can do a lot of cooking without the tip. Or we've had some chefs say, Leanne, actually, all of my knives could be rounded apart from one that's maybe a couple of centimetres, and that's the one I use to defillet the fish, and that's kept here, there, and everywhere. And that's what chefs would have. So there's getting other people's perspectives into this sort of discussion, because what people aren't aware of is the tip is what creates the pressure point when you use that in a stabbing motion, which then goes through your clothing, through your skin, and then into an internal organ, which then trauma surgeons say it's really difficult to fix that.
Yeah.
So that, you know, if we can prevent people from being in their moments, then surely that's a preventative measure.
It all makes sense to me, and I imagine everybody listening right now. This seems like a positive way forward and something that everyone should be discussing. And if you knocked at my door as Leanne, who was there, who witnessed everything that we only read about, you lived it. If Leanne Lucas came to me and said, put your kitchen knife in the bin and find an alternative, do it. I wouldn't question it. I'd do it. I'd be like, absolutely, yes. Do you come up against much resistance?
We do, but it's normally when people haven't sat and had a conversation around it or seen the research. There's a scientist called Dr. Leisha Nichols-Drew. She has researched this. She's done the science that proves a rounded tip knife does not cause the same lethal damage that a pointed tip knife does. Mm-hmm. It has been proven.
It reminds me of the whole, if you hit someone when you're driving at 20 miles an hour, the damage is not going to be what it is if you hit somebody at 30 or 40 miles an hour. This seems very similar. And we got that in front of people and we made the change. Slow down for Bobby, the Slow Down for Bobby campaign. Wow, they've made such a difference.
Yeah.
This feels like it's in the same little vein as this.
We've had a multitude of people come forward and say, do you know what? The one phrase is, this is a no-brainer.
Yes.
And the other one is, God, I didn't know this existed.
Yep.
Or I'm doing it right now because, and then they tell me their personal either experience or something where they've had a near miss, or do you know what I've seen where this could potentially go down a different avenue here?
Yeah.
And then actually it causes that ripple effect between whoever does it and whoever the victim is, because sometimes some of the case studies, and this does not apply to everybody, but some case studies that have come forward are like, or say, like, it might be a case of special educational needs, mental health, dementia, PTSD. There are many, many reasons why people might feel threat in a certain moment that might not be threatening to somebody else. Mm. And that's where, if we don't also put the energy into how do we help people to be able to regulate and things like that, this won't solve everything.
Yeah.
So we're very aware of that, and that's never been our argument. And I do say to people, if they want to have a conversation with any of us, whether it's the police officer who's working with us, violence reduction, the trauma surgeon, trauma expert, if they want to talk to any of us, these people are willing to do that. And that's when I know someone's a good person, is they'll go out of their way to share this information and something they've learned.
Yeah.
And that's where I think research sits. Why are we not tapping into the research that university students are producing year on year? And why are we not putting that into real life and helping to basically safeguard the public?
Yeah. And listening to you, who's been on this journey and obviously taking the time to research and understand, it's our job then to move this forward. It's our job, everybody, I include you listening to this now, to find, let's be blunt, to share it, to talk about this conversation, to share this podcast with other people, just to get the word out there so we can make change and we can find some kind of meaning to what comes next. Because right now, in this moment, I'm looking at you and you seem well put together. You've got the facts, the figures, and a real understanding of what we need to do to make change. And we will do what you tell us to do, because we're here to support and love you through this. And with that, I have to ask, this Leanne Lucas who's with me right now, how different is she to Leanne Lucas before the Southport attacks?
It's such a hard question, because mm-hmm. I think it depends how far away I zoom out to look at myself.
And you have to really monitor that, how you zoom out and how much you focus on what happened and where you are now to cope.
Yeah, and sometimes it's all anyone wants to talk to me about, and actually it's not appropriate.
You were Leanne
Lucas not appropriate
before this.
Yeah, and so was everybody else.
Yeah,
that they were all their individual identity. So this does not have to define us. But when we learn things, we can help other people. So I see parts of myself that I've kept and I've really, really tried to hold on to. And I think I'm really proud of the Liliana was before. So, you know, it would be such a shame for me to lose her. So I've done an awful lot of work to try and keep aspects of myself that I know make me a good person. So there's that, but there's also a whole side of me that now, like, I surprise myself at how I've done this. I don't know how I've got to where I am today, because there have been days where, like, I just don't want to be here anymore. And that would be easier, wouldn't it? That would be easier for me. It wouldn't be easier for anyone else.
Yeah, this is hard work, what you're doing. This is taking every part of you to find something to focus on and to make that change and to prevent, if we can, something so awful to ever happen again. And that is the other option.
Yeah.
And we are so grateful that that's where you're going.
If my voice can sit in rooms where we're discussing what we do next and the future and things that have to change, if my voice can be there, it will be there. Like, that's it now for me. Like, I'll still spend time with my friends and family, and I'll still do things that I love. But this is my calling now.
Yeah.
And I want to look back when I'm an old lady and be like, do you remember when we all came together and said, this is not okay?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember when we did that? And sometimes I do compare this to how society got together after Dunblane.
Yeah.
And how people really stood by one another and said, things have to change across many, many sectors, not even one. And we've seen that through the inquiry, haven't we?
Yeah.
There are so many failings and so many gaps and so much where actually they could be easily solved, some of them.
Mm-hmm.
What are we waiting for?
Yeah.
So this is where my voice sits on. I do ask these people, why, what are you waiting for?
Yeah.
Why can this not be changed? Why can this not be done? And asking the questions that maybe some people think are too hard or they're too far removed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where lived experience really does hold a place in Parliament, in government, in local authorities, in local police forces, in have you thought about it from this perspective? And sometimes it's no. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I appreciate them answers because they're honest and open.
Yeah.
And then it's what do we do next? So I do often say, I didn't choose what happened to me, but I can choose what happens next.
Yeah.
And if I can do anything to make sure we are considering things,
yeah,
that's all I want.
Yes.
Has this been considered?
Yeah.
So that this doesn't happen again.
Yeah. And that's the difference we can all make, but we would never expect you to do it on your own. So everybody needs to do their part. And who are the people who are stepping up to help you with this then? It's not just Leanne Lucas on her own.
Do you know what? This is something that has really helped me.
Mm.
And these people haven't flocked to my door. I've gone and found them. I've sought them out. So sometimes I think it's nice to sit and think, gosh, loads of people just must have rocked up and helped all these people out. That's not the case a lot of the time. And sometimes it's because people don't know what to say and they don't know how to help. And they're like, I can't offer to help because what can I do?
Yeah.
So I think the fact that we've managed to find an avenue to go, these are the things you could do to help. People have been brave enough to pick up the phone or send the email. But as well, I've been brave to do that as well.
Of course.
So I work with people in every sector, whether they're a nurse, a doctor, a social worker, an early help worker, a teacher, a head teacher, survivors, bereaved, police officers, you name it,
mm-hmm.
someone stepped forward. And it's either because of their role,
yeah,
their responsibility in the community, or something has happened to them in the past. People fit into a category.
Yeah.
And honestly, seeing the good in the world outweigh the bad has shifted something in me, because that day and for a whole year after, I thought, gosh, this world is much worse than I thought.
We all did.
Honestly.
We were with you on that. We all did. We thought, this is something you couldn't dream up. Not if you were the best horror movie writer in the world. This was the darkest of times. And I think we were with you on that. It was like, if this is becoming what we live now, what do we do?
And I think something we could do as public without, let's be blunt, let's just celebrate the wins.
Yeah.
So if you know someone who has gone through something and you see something they've done, whether that's they've gone out on their own for the day or, you know, they're texting somebody back, because actually communication is really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So when you see someone do something that they couldn't do before, oh my God, celebrate it. Because that person might not be able to see it in themselves. And I think that's where I've got great family and friends. And now these new people that have entered my life, these experts who will reflect on, gosh, Leanne, do you remember a year ago when you wouldn't do this or you wouldn't do this? Or, so I think taking them moments to reflect on the successes and celebrations, because people do have to live their life after a disaster. You can't just go and sit in a dark room and wait your life out. Like, you can't do that. So mm-hmm. people need to give space and people need to celebrate when, I don't know, someone in their family or their friends or whatever, when they're doing things out of their comfort zone. So I think that is something where the public can all make an impact on somebody they know. Being courageous. So if you believe in something, say it.
Yes.
Say it.
Say from your chest, say on this pod.
Don't close your door and go, oh, no one's going to listen to me. So, let's empower people to use their voices and to make a positive impact on where they live or, you know, the people around them. So this is what the public can do. If they have a passion and, you know, an interest in what I'm doing, you know, then that might be the next layer of stepping forward and saying, Leanne, this is my role, or, you know, I'm a parent, or whatever it is that they've come to me for, and say, how is it I can help? And whether that's through joining the movement, looking at becoming an ambassador, sharing the awareness, inviting me in to where they work, or whether it's the other side of actually being a social entrepreneur is quite difficult.
Yeah.
So is it giving me some mentorship or some sponsorship, or, you know, actually getting me a foot in some doors.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many avenues of where people are comfortable with the support that you give. So I think sometimes I've got to tell people what that is because they might not know.
Definitely. And if anyone's listening and they want to contact you, Let's Be Blunt, is this all over social media?
On the website, it's letsbeblunt.co.uk, but you can follow us on Instagram and LinkedIn. I post an awful lot about what we get up to on LinkedIn. There's so much people can get involved in. And honestly, I really appreciate everyone coming forward and even just wanting to learn. That's step number one.
Is
can you tell me a little bit more about what this is?
Mm-hmm.
That's step number one.
And we can all do that and take it with us. Let's go back to Leanne of young then. So dancing, I imagine, at a young age. That's what we imagine with our dance teachers. And then training, where did you go? Did you train locally?
Do you know what's really, really funny? And this is where I think we need to be careful what we watch and hear and see is, I'm not a dance teacher. But that's what society thinks.
There's the press once again.
So this is where now I read.
Dance teacher, Leanne Lewis.
Yeah, I read things in the press now and go, oh, let me just think if that's the truth. Because Heidi's the dance teacher. I'm the yoga teacher. So this is these are things that are minute details that.
This is your life.
Yeah.
This is where I can see
how it can be very upsetting when people write or say or speak about things and you go, do you know what? I've never said that, or that's not true.
Does that happen to you, Leanne? Do you find you misquoted or things are taken out?
Or I might not have spoken to that person and all of a sudden I've said something, or, you know.
And friend of, which we see in the press all the time, friend of Leanne or friends of.
So I think this is where we need to be a little bit aware as society of actually a lot of things we read. Where have they got that from?
I talk about this all the time. You know, if you were not there, just take a moment, no matter what you read or you see, to just question, do you actually know enough about what you're talking about?
So
when you're jumping in comments, and we see it all the time on newspaper articles, my lord have heard me talk about this so much, whether it's radio or podcast. Take a minute before you type anything else to say, do I know enough about this to have such a strong opinion? Have you dealt with that then? I'm looking at your face and I see the hate in your face and I'm thinking, I know the answer to this before she even says it.
Yeah. And it's something I never experienced before this. And I don't think we can realise the enormity of actually it. Because everyone knows your name, they now can all have an input into what you say, do, think, feel. And that could be all consuming. And that could send you down a really negative path. So, you know, I've been really appreciative towards people who have kept me in check, kept me humbled and counseled me. So, you know, and made me realise that I do trust my own gut feeling and what people say, it's a reflection on them. Mm-hmm. So, it's been an eye-opener really to what some people go through on a daily basis.
Are we talking trolls here? Because I can't imagine ever, but we hear the terms victim shaming and, you know, things like that all the time on socials. But sitting here with you now, and we've opened this little can of worms, let's delve a little bit. I can't imagine anybody in the public hearing your story, knowing what you went through, coming at you with anything other than love and support.
I think this is the dangers of social media. I think this is, if you appear on someone's phone in their home, they then feel they have access to you. So, you know, I don't just speak on my behalf. I imagine this is anyone whose name has been put out there for one reason or another is, people think that they can have an opinion on all sorts. But do you know what? It's actually made me check myself, because then I think, well, how do I speak to people? How do I respond to people? When I read things online and I go, oh, I don't agree with that. Actually, I don't write a comment where I could.
Yeah.
But sometimes
especially
I think,
if it's about you.
Yeah, but sometimes I think, actually, that's not to do with me. That's not true. Like, you know, so
that speaks about them and where they're coming from and what they're going through.
Yeah.
I've dealt with bits on socials, not much, I'll be honest, but I've had many a person in this seat with me who've really been taken to task, whether they're a celebrity or not, or their story's made the papers for whatever reason. And that's where we always come to at the end of the conversation is there's only so much you can do. You can't argue with faceless people or people who are online who, when you read it, are probably in bed or forgotten they've written it. It was a moment in their life that they've forgotten. Now, for you on the receiving end, it's something else. And that's what I want people to understand.
And you know what I think now is, I think, is this person a change maker? Yes or no? Then I'll listen to you. Yeah. If they're making change in the world,
mm-hmm.
and you might say, oh, Leanne, can I just fact check what you said or something like that? I've got time of day for them.
Yeah.
But if they're not doing anything to help make this a better place, oh, sorry, I don't have time for that.
It's a great way of framing it. Brilliant way of framing it. And that's another coping mechanism. So talk to me about your recovery, physical, mental. In the last 2 years, the journey you never wanted to be on, you didn't choose, you were forced into. Let's start with the physical recovery. What did that look like? Talk to us about day one.
Physical, it's quite interesting really, because the body is miraculous. Some people do have lasting injuries, but your body is constantly working to recover. I do still have things that impact my day-to-day life, but not enough to share with people, if I'm honest, because yeah. I know some people, their day-to-day life looks very different. And, you know,
here's Leanne Lucas once again.
I know, but it's not something
to everybody else.
It makes me feel very uncomfortable, if I'm honest, because I think about people who don't have physical injuries and their mental injuries are just as bad. Like, and I know we're moving on in the times, but honestly, the psychological traumas that people have from things should be taken more seriously.
Yeah, and not just in your situation. You're obviously doing it, Leanne Lucas, and you're putting it on everybody.
But this is what I'm
everybody else.
What I mean is, this the psychological damage does often outweigh the physical damage that is done.
The same in your case?
Oh, of course, because even to this day, like, there's things that, like, people just don't even think about that I'll think about constantly, to the point where it becomes quite normal, and then you have to sort of stand back and go, oh, that might not have been a thought I didn't have 3 years ago, but now, unfortunately, I do. It has made me more hypervigilant, more risk aware, more looking at, gosh, if I go here and something happens, who's going to do this? Who's going to do that? What do I do? And, you know, it's moments where I have got into a little bit of a place now where I do think about things like, okay, every time I get in a car, I'm not going to have a car crash. So every time I meet a stranger, they're not going to attack me. Mm-hmm. So I do have to put things into perspective.
Yeah. And is that simply just talking to yourself and saying those words to yourself?
Or sometimes it's I'll say a phrase out loud to a friend and I'll go, is that normal? And, you know, we have a moment where we go, but Leanne, that's absolutely not normal. Or, you know, you think like this because of this thing. And So it's one of them where I've actually had to try and get out of my head a little bit because I was becoming my own worst enemy.
Yeah.
Physically, things were obviously horrendous, but, you know, I'm out and about, but it's the psychological stuff really where I'm so grateful to the support network that I have.
And is that family and friends?
It is family and friends. It's family and friends, and it's people that have joined this journey throughout the year. So some people who I've got on speed dial now, I didn't know last year. And
life has a funny way of doing
that. It really does. And they
introducing these people.
Yeah, like
that come from nowhere, but they either stay for a chapter or they stay for a lifetime.
Yeah, I mean, some of my friends have stayed for a lifetime. You know, they've sat through the whole thing, you know, and they're here every single day. So, you know, shout out to them of like, how do you manage someone who's going through the worst moment of their life? Like, it's actually really difficult, especially if you've got friends who are fixers. Yeah. You can't fix this.
Yeah.
So then they're having to then go away and go, oh gosh, I'm trying to fix Leanne and I can't. So I haven't got what
the
am
tools,
I doing?
Yeah.
You know, or one day I might yell at them over a minor thing that they go, oh, guess what's happened to me? And I'm like, and then I realise actually everyone's problems are relative. So, you know, I've had to do an awful lot of work myself on, a lot of people don't have these experiences, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Everyone still has the same qualities. So it's the old friends and it's the new friends. And they really, really do help me and keep me doing this, because around November I was quitting this. Yeah, because I tried it and I thought, oh, not sure I'm up to this. But I'm still healing now. So I've got to give myself some grace with that of, do you know what? Some days I have to say, I don't think I can have that meeting today, or can we not talk about that subject? Because, you know, people are interested and they're trying to learn. I get that, but sometimes they might have overstepped a mark, or, you know, want to ask me something that I will never, ever share.
And it's different, I imagine, with the people that you sit with. I'm very conscious. I'm sitting here and I'm talking to you as woman to woman. I'm not sitting here as a journalist or a broadcaster. I'm just sitting here as someone who watched it, felt it, and knows that you've got something niggling away that you need to do. There needs to be change, and I need to do whatever I can to help you out. But I can imagine you've sat with people hoping for that, broadcasters, journalists, press, who haven't done that. They've wanted the headlines. They've wanted the clickbait. That's the world in which we live. And as a girl who's never been around that before, with no support, no media training in that side of things, how did that feel? Because that must take any tiny bit of power that you felt you had left or control. That must have taken that away from you too.
It was a catch-22, because how do you raise public awareness without going on channels that people can see you?
Yeah.
I can't knock on everyone's door. Like, that just isn't gonna work. So I tried it, and people either get it right or wrong, and it is difficult because everyone's different. But gosh, like, the media is a crazy world.
It's not pleasant, is it? It's not a nice place.
One thing I started to let people know when I met them, whether it was in a court environment or an inquiry environment or a media environment, was I am not an expert here. Because for some reason, people just treat you as you know exactly what's going on. You know the pros and cons. You know how to... I mean, I didn't even know what words were, like embargo and stuff. I had no idea. I didn't do any of this sort of stuff. So I really appreciate the support that's come alongside that. So there's been people who have stepped up and said, Leanna, realise you could be taken advantage of here, or people might be asking you to do things that you don't want to do or you feel uncomfortable with. So can I come alongside and support you with this? And, you know, I'll be forever grateful for them people, because they believe in the message, and the only way the message can get out there is through public channels. So it's making sure that I'm supported through these avenues, I guess, so that then I can get that message out there, but then it's not a detriment to me and my healing as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course the families and
exactly
everybody else who is involved, and everybody's going through something different.
Exactly.
We discussed earlier the survivors, what they're going through, the families who lost their children. It's tough to navigate, but what is very clear is where you want this to go. And it's change, it's prevention, and it's education.
Exactly. And just allowing everyone to have their purpose, whatever it is that enables them to get up the next day and to carry on. Let's let them do it.
Yeah.
Let's support them. Let's cheer them on from the sidelines. Where, you know, let's make sure everyone has the opportunity to survive and thrive, mm-hmm. not just wake up every day. Because that would be really sad if that's the outcome of us trying to recover, is actually nobody allowed us to recover.
Mm-hmm.
And I do hope that sits with people, really, where they sit and think, actually, yeah, how would you recover? How do you take the next step? And actually, it's sometimes giving people the space to go, what is it? What is it that I've got a passion for and an interest in? And, you know, can we allow them to do that?
And there's no one way. There's no one size fits all with this. This is something we didn't believe when it happened. I still, when I look at the details and I remind myself of each step, every news bulletin that I was sat next to newsreaders and they were choked of new news that was coming out and the world was watching. And there was a part of us all hoping, this is not going to be true. This can't be true. It was. It happened. And now the only thing left for us all to do is try and spread the word and make change and prevent it happening again. We support you, Leanne. We do. All of the listeners do. Please message her, get in touch, offer your support if you can. But like Leanne says, a simple follow, asking a question, a comment. Please support our lovely Leanne Lucas. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
Subscribe now
via the iTunes Store.
Hear more from the Ladies of Liverpool
via ladiesofliverpool.com.
Ladies of Liverpool, brought to you by the Orthodontic Practice on Rodney Street.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.